brought to you by Penguin.
On Freedom, written and read by Timothy Snyder.
For those who wish to be free. Preface. "What do you think?" asked Maria, smiling in her bright dress, as I ducked under the doorframe of her orderly little hut and stepped back into the sunshine and the rubble. "Everything as it should be?" It was. Her rugs and blankets, laid out in nice rectilineal patterns, recalled Ukrainian futurist art. The cords leading to her generator were tidily arranged, and water bottles were near at hand. A thick book lay open on her bed. Outside her metal domicile, a temporary dwelling provided by an international organization, woolen sweaters were drying on a line. A pretty wooden drawer, lined in felt, rested on a bench, like an open Pandora's box. When I complimented her on it, Maria offered the drawer to me as a gift. It was a lonely relic of her house, just in front of us, a ruin after bombs and shells. She looked up nervously at a passing plane. "Everything happened," she sighed, "and none of it was necessary." Like every house in the village, Maria's was destroyed during the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Osad Pokrovske, in the far south of the country, was at the edge of the Russian advance. It rests among fields of sunflowers in this fertile region. The Ukrainian army pushed the Russians out of artillery range in late 2022, making it safe to return or to visit, as I am doing now, in September 2023. Taking a seat on the bench and listening to Maria, I think about freedom. The village, one would say, has been liberated. Are its people free? To be sure, something terrible has been removed from Maria's life. The daily threat of violent death, an occupation by torturers and murderers. But is that, even that, liberation? Maria is 85 years old and living alone. Now that she has her neat little residence, she is certainly freer than she was when she was homeless. That is because family and volunteers came to help. And because a government has acted, one to which she feels connected by her vote. Maria does not complain of her own fate. She cries when she speaks of the difficult challenges faced by her president. The Ukrainian word deoccupation, which she and I are using in conversation, is more precise than the conventional liberation. It invites us to consider what, beyond the removal of oppression, we might need for liberty. It takes work, after all, to get one older woman into a position where she can greet guests and perform the normal interactions of a dignified person. I have trouble imagining Maria being truly free, without a proper house with a chair, and without a clear path to the road for her walker. Freedom is not just an absence of evil, but a presence of good. Southern Ukraine is steppe, northern Ukraine is forest. Visiting a deoccupied town in the north of the country, I had similar thoughts about freedom. Having dropped off my children at friendly schools in New Haven, Connecticut, I made the journey to an abandoned school building in Yahidne, which Russian occupiers had transformed into a small concentration camp. For most of the time that the village was occupied, the Russians had packed 350 civilians, its entire population, into the school basement, an area of less than 200 square meters. 70 of the villagers were children, the youngest an infant. Yahidne was deoccupied in April 2022, and I visited that September. On the ground floor, Russian soldiers had destroyed the furniture. On the walls, they left behind dehumanizing graffiti about Ukrainians. There was no electricity. By the light of my phone, I made my way down to the cellar and examined the children's drawings on its walls. I could read what they had written: "No to war." My children later helped me identify the characters, such as an imposter from the game Among Us. By a doorframe were two lists, written in chalk, of the names of the perished. On one side, those executed by the Russians, of whom, as best I could tell, there were 17. On the other, those who died from exhaustion or illness.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?